We're also joined by Rodan, Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hello, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Senator, White House, Senate Democrats have to defend 25 seats next year compared to just 9 for Senate Republicans. Is that going to result in stronger Republican control of the chamber?
Ordinarily, it ought to. But what we're seeing is such a tidal shift in the electorate against Trump and such an animation of our side of the aisle that we actually, I think, stand a reasonably good chance of holding our own, even though of those 25 Democratic seats, 10 of them are in states that Trump won, and many of them ones that Trump won convincingly. But we have very good candidates, and if you look at what just happened in Kansas, if there's been a 20-point shift between November and now, that is going to help a lot of these candidates do very well.
Let's go to Scott.
I'm wondering, Senator, why so many contortions on the Burrillville power plant? You know, Governor Raimondo started off as a big cheerleader of this thing, and lately she's cooled down a little bit. She's become more measured, saying that this is not a slam dunk, that we're going to let the regulatory process work its way. And I think she's become a little more measured on this whole thing. Where do you stand now on the power plant?
Where I always have, which is that I think that this is a decision that the state needs to make. It's one that is in the area where it's really not appropriate to try to bring political influence to bear. It is in a quasi-judicial body. It's in front of the Energy Facility Siting Board. I have a lot of confidence in Janet Coit, who sits on the Energy Facility Siting Board, on Meg Curran, who sits on the Energy Facility Siting Board. They have to make their decision based on evidence. It's going to be reviewed by courts. If there's political interference one way or the other, or if the evidence isn't there to support the proper decision, then the courts will throw their decision out. I think if you believe in law and rule of law, at some point, you've got to let the agencies make their decision.
And yes, I think that's the right way to do it. You're a very strong environmentalist, and this is a fossil fuel plant, and I'm just wondering,
but I don't think we can, we can't win the battle that we need to fight one facility at a time, I don't believe. And when people locally want to oppose a facility, you know, I'm all for that. God bless them. Do whatever they want to do. I think that's terrific. But I have the benefit of having a seat in Congress and in the Senate. I have the ability, I think, to actually find a way to tip the discussion towards a solution to the climate change problem that will make the Invenergy Project and a lot of others have a whole different aspect to them once you've got a proper price on carbon and once you're no longer subsidizing these big fossil fuel plants. The heart of the problem is the huge subsidy for fossil fuel that Congress imposes. And to go out and fight plant by plant without fixing that basic original sin is, I think, misplaced priorities on my part. And I know that the people in Burrillville who are opposing the plant feel differently and wish I would take a more active position against that particular plant. But I'm working about as hard as I know how to try to solve this problem in the place where I've got the lane to run in, and that's in the Senate.
Let's go to two questions about campaign finance, a subject near and dear to your heart, Senator Whitehouse. We see how a group affiliated with the Democratic Governors Association is running commercials in support of Governor Raimondo's college tuition plan. This group does not identify all of its financial contributors. So is this an example of the kind of anonymous dark money giving of which you are often very critical?
Yep, it absolutely is. Unfortunately, once the rules came down to the point where unlimited dark money could be used in politics, Democrats have had to follow along and try to keep up with the Republican advantage here. And I think it's really a shame. The real difference between the parties is when given a chance to vote on whether to continue dark money, unlimited dark money, or not, we always vote for disclosure and transparency. The Republicans actually used to, but once they saw all the dark money coming their way, they had a really violent change of heart and suddenly became big proponents of dark money. So they vote against it all the time. I would love to see us rid of it. I think it is a plague on our democracy. And I think one of the reasons people are so angry and frustrated that democracy is not, in their view, responsive to them is because it is not, in fact, responsive to them. And that's because it's responsive to the big interests who are hiding behind the big money. no wonder people think American democracy's gotten a little bit weird. It has gotten weird, and it's all happened in the last decade.
Let's go to my second question on campaign finance. The cable TV giant Comcast has been one of your largest financial contributors since you were first elected to the Senate, giving you more than $50,000. I don't think Comcast does business in Rhode Island, so why is Comcast giving you that substantial amount of money?
I honestly don't know. And frankly, given the way campaign finance works over the course of 10 years, that's not really even very noticeable. So I'm hearing this from you now for the first time. I honestly have no idea, but I'm more than happy to try to get you an answer.
Let's go back to Scott.
Learning about the Middle East, you know, you came out in favor of President Trump's intervention in Syria, but it seems to me in the Middle East, we haven't done anything right in American foreign policy, really, I'd say, since the Suez Crisis and Eisenhower's response. What is the next move in the Middle East?
I wish I knew, and I don't know. I do think that President Trump made the right decision sending a signal to Assad that these human atrocities have to stop.
Whether that's it was fine, an effective signal or not. What's the next move?
That's not, you know, we have to keep the pressure on ISIS, and we have to try to build a coalition of countries that will support peace. But the rivalry between the Sunni and the Shia sects of Islam is very, very strong and runs very, very deep. And we have the added problem of when we step in, we tend to create so much blowback against ourselves that very often the blowback is worse than whatever we achieved by stepping in.
Does Assad have to go?
So I think ultimately he does have to go. I think the man is a war criminal, and he is one of the cruelest tyrants of our age. I'd hate to think that we're in a world in which the price of peace in Syria is that a savage like that has to be able to retain power.
We're almost out of time here, but it looks like two Republicans could run for the chance to compete against you when you run for re-election next year. Former Supreme Court Justice Robert Flanders and State Representative Robert Nardalillo. What is your message on why the voters of Rhode Island should return you to the Senate?
The Senate has given me the opportunity to do a lot of things for Rhode Island. And it's been my real privilege to serve Rhode Island there. I think I've brought a good voice to the Senate, and I think I've used my position in the Senate to do things like bring the Comprehensive Addiction Recovery Act into law and to see to things like the repair of Highway 95, where it goes by the mall, and the repair of the main pier down at Quonset that has opened up business down there, the new crane. We have a delegation that works together very well to keep huge numbers of jobs here in Rhode Island, particularly in the submarine building business. Major credit there to Jim Langevin and to Jack Reed. But we are a team that works well together for the people of Rhode Island, and I hope to be able to continue to be a part of that team.
Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And U.S. Senator Sheldon Whitehouse.
My pleasure being with you both.